Our subject is making the rally movement a vital part or arm of the assembly. And so I thought, well, this verse would be a help to us to establish some of our thoughts on Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 17. It says, "Obey your leaders and submit to their authority." Now the word there could be translated elders, but the word actually is leaders. It's not elders there, though one would anticipate elders, of course, to be leaders, but it's those that have a responsibility of leadership. But then it says, "They keep watch over you as men who must give an account." So those who have a leadership responsibility in the church one day will have to stand before the Lord Jesus, take the easy illustration of an assembly's oversight. Say the oversight at this assembly here for this period of time. One day those men will stand before the Lord Jesus and they will have to give an account to the Lord Jesus of what they did with all the gift he entrusted to them. Now I find that, as an elder myself, a very frightening responsibility. Because God gives to an oversight musicians and artists and youth workers and preachers and teachers and accountants and administrators, tradesmen, and so many, many gifts, very, very varied. And the responsibility of the leaders is to make sure that that gift entrusted to them in the church of God is used and doesn't go to waste. And that's why I think the Apostle Paul wrote in 2 Thessalonians chapter 4 in regard to people who have a form of godliness. In other words, they seem to be religious, but there is no evidence of God's power among them. He says if they have a form of godliness, but there is no power, from such flee or turn away. If you're in a church that is ineffective and there is no evidence of God's power, get out of that church, if you call it a church. And here he's talking about, we obey those that have the leadership of us. It's important that we do, because one day they must stand before God to give an account of how they have led us and use the abilities that we have. So obey them, so that their work will be a joy, not a burden, for that would be of no advantage to you. We're thinking then about the rally being a coordinated arm of the assembly, and why is the question. Now, first of all, I believe with real sincerity that the rally is in every sense a part of the assembly, without any questions at all. It's run by assembly people. It's often held in the assembly buildings. And the purpose is to link children with the assembly, that one day they may become assembly members too. So it's an integral part. It's important that we don't cut the rallies off from the assembly, that we don't make the rallies sort of the unwanted stepchild of the church. There are lots of places, and having been around a little bit, I sometimes find this attitude. Some leaders of the church, elders, accept the rally movement as a vital part of the church, and they support it, give it everything they have. And others, well, the rally people, well, of course, they make a lot of noise, they're forever breaking windows, I don't know. And there is that kind of problem. And something needs to be done about it so that it's seen that it really is a vital part of the church. I believe it is for the reasons that I've suggested. And we've been talking this afternoon of the need for both people, those who lead the church and those involved in rally work, to try and tie the two together so that the believers see this to be the case. The beginning of my time here in Sydney, which I've enjoyed very, very much, I went out to West Pennant Hills and saw something that was a real thrill. I think the evening was called the Theatre Restaurant, And the whole church, I think, pretty well was involved. And I've been talking to people about this without very much success. As we were saying this afternoon, I've told a lot of people, I haven't communicated. Because I believe with all the work that was put in for this evening, the backdrops are all painted, the script is written, which is a very effective script, but very simple to learn, that it's the kind of evening that any rally and assembly could put on now with a minimum of work, because the real work has been done. The evening was, for those who don't know about it, was held in their youth hall, part of the assembly there at West Penrith Hills. Tables were very, very nicely set. They were on a slight angle. They were beautifully laid with a kind of a white disposable type of tablecloth. There was a lovely floral arrangement in the middle. Obviously, the lady that didn't know what she was doing, because it came up into a little rise to surround a candle, so the candle was hardly seen. It was beautifully done. The table was very, very nicely set, you know, with salt and pepper, that kind of thing. And then I was invited to sort of say something by way of introduction, and read the introduction to the play, which was The Stoning of Stephen, which I did. It was also written on their sort of menu, and the menu was called Welcome to Theatre Restaurant. When you opened it, there was part of the introduction to this. And then that the Act 1 took place. Very, very simple, but they'd got lights up, properly done, a bit of a stage, curtains went across. And Act 1 took place. Then we had the first course that was served by the young people in the church. And they had white shirts, bow ties, and a little cloth over here, and they served the tables. Folk were waited on. So the young people were involved. The youth group of the church were vitally involved. I understand a lot of other people were involved in the setting up of the stage and the lighting. So other members of the church had been involved. Ladies of the church had been involved in providing the meal. So it was very, very much a church activity. After Act 1, after Course 1, we then had Act 2, and I did a little bit of an introduction, Act 2, and that took place. It was very good. Then we had the dessert. Then Act 3 and 4 went successively with a brief word from myself in the middle, just while they got things arranged. Then I brought a very simple message. It was deliberately designed, and my instructions were very clear, which I appreciated. This is a bridge-building exercise. You know, we're not going to sort of slam them with the gospel. We want to share, in a very gentle fashion, the reality of the message of Jesus Christ, which I trust we did. Then there was tea and coffee and a time to chat. The joy was, one, it was very well done. Nothing was spared that needed to be spared. Nothing was done cheaply, though it was not extravagant. No visitor coming, no unchurched person. I think only one parent didn't come, and that person couldn't come. And they couldn't come. In other words, every single parent of the rally children was present except for one who had a prior engagement, and that person sent their apologies, they would have been there. So you virtually had 100% turnout. That's amazing. But the thrill was the involvement of the folk. The cream on the top of it all was this. That while the activity was being held, while the evening was being held, from the commencement time to the concluding time, there were two groups of people involved in prayer for the evening, I think in two separate homes. Am I right? Something like that. Which is rather marvellous. That was a church involved in evangelism. And that's tremendously important. I was mentioning this afternoon that occasionally I've gone along to speak at a rally breakup, a parents' night, some other function, and the lady particularly had been very upset because the church has not been there. It is an integral part of the church. We need to make it that. Often, it's the most effective outreach we have. Especially if it's complemented by adult work. When I went into full-time work, I was just a kid of 22, which is ridiculously young and too young. But I did a bit. And the Lord was very gracious. And then I got married, which was nice. And my wife and I were involved in youth work, and we did a number of rallies between us. We did a lot of Bible in schools. We were doing a lot of youth work our whole time. In fact, it's fun when you're newly married and have no children, which is the way it's supposed to be. And we had a table that pulled out and the leaves unfolded. Monday morning, the table was spotless. It was clean. And as the week proceeded, it had flannel graph bits, cutouts, scissors, glue, until it was just a little corner of the table on Friday night, Sunday, that we could eat off. Because we were so busy with children's work, doing puppet things, and goodness knows what, we were doing this. And then after a while, after a year of that, we stopped. We were working very hard. The response was unnoticeable. Now, there are two things need to be understood. We can concentrate on youth work because we're not mature enough to confront adults with the gospel. That's one problem. We can also be involved in youth work because it's the easiest thing to do. Or we can be involved in youth work as a means of reaching families. So what we did, we stopped all this activity. I don't know how many Bible in schools we did a week. We ran about sort of 10 miles away. We ran a Wednesday night after school, sort of adventure time, happy hour thing. And we're always tearing around the place with phonograph boards and let's play. We didn't have overhead projectors then. So we stopped at the end of the year. And we did a very, very careful assessment. And we dropped all the children's work that we could not complement with adult work. So if we weren't able to cash in on those school groups' adults, we dropped the school. You know, that's terrible. No, it isn't. Somebody else will do it. But we began to work with these kids in this district and those parents. And these few rallies, we did less rallies, and just in that church, and we worked on those parents. And then we started a family Bible hour, which I'm a great enthusiast of, and that also began to grow. And we complemented the youth work with the adult work. Very often we say, as I've written up here, we reach the adults through the children, but it's very rarely done. And we'll see the leakage in the rally movement, which is no fault of the rally movement, later on. Another reason why it must be included as a part is to realize the link in assembly coordination. Now, I'd like to take a moment with this chart. This is virtually a chart of our own church, and I'd like to spend a moment or two moments with you. You've got at the top potential families. That's teens, children, mums and dads. The bods out there, we want to reach for the Lord. The point is, we want to get them into assembly fellowship down here. The question is, how? Sometimes I've been working in a church, and in fact most assemblies, everybody is very busy. I remember being a full-time pastor, that's a word that offends some people, but anyway, don't worry about it, in a church, and my wife was with me, and we wanted someone to do something else. We went down the prayer list, and there was no one we felt we could ask. Everybody was flat out. We thought, there's nobody we can ask. Now, that person's got a little baby, and that one's, you know, this, and that person's doing this, and that person's doing Bible in schools, that person's doing rallies, and we just couldn't ask them. They were all busy people. And I just didn't feel free to go and say, could you do this? But at the end of the year, when the dust settled, and everything had been completed, we hadn't grown by one member. Our church was the same size. Was no bigger. And I sometimes go to an assembly and I see them very, 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 very busy. But you get talking, and I never, as a visitor in a place, I would never offer any comments in Sydney as to what I think about your assemblies or this or that or the next thing. People try to get me to make comments, and I don't want to make comments. I haven't been here long enough to understand. And that would be silly and rude and probably destructive and unhelpful. But when I'm in a church, often it's offered, you know, people say, you know, Malcolm, can't understand it. We're quite a bit smaller than we were last year. In fact, the last 5 years, our assembly has gone down. and the assembly has got smaller, quite appreciably so, noticeably so. But we don't know why. Everybody's busy, but we don't know why. And one of the reasons is people don't seem to ever stop and say, now I'm doing a specific job. How does my job fit in to the whole concept? In one of the areas that we've been, I've used the illustration of a man who went onto a building site, and they were building a cathedral. I don't care which cathedral, but anyone you'd like to think of. And they were building a cathedral. And there was a man, he was a bricklayer, and he was laying bricks. And he was building a beautiful brick stone pier in this cathedral. It was very, very skillful. And the guy on the site went to him and said, excuse me, sir, what are you doing? He said, laying bricks. Another man, who was a glazier, was putting in glass, beautiful coloured stained glass, in a window that he was doing in this cathedral. And the man went to him and said, excuse me, sir, what are you doing? He said, oh, I'm just putting glass in this window. He went to another man who was the labourer on the job, who had a wheelbarrow full of mortar. And this was a labourer, a very unskilled man, the lowest skilled man on the site. And he was going along with his wheelbarrow full of mortar, and the guy said to him, excuse me, what are you doing? And this guy said, I'm building a cathedral. That's a big difference. This guy was just putting bricks in. That's his only vision, just getting those bricks done. This guy's vision was just a vision of getting these windows done. This guy here, who was the thickest of the lot, had the vision. Though it was only just carrying mortar from here to there, he was building a cathedral. Some people are just building a rally, building a youth work, building a Sunday school class, building this, building that, building that. Instead of seeing, I'm part of building an assembly. I'm not just running a rally. I'm not just running a youth group. I'm part of building an assembly for God in this district. And I know where I fit in. I know who relates to me and who doesn't. So when you look at this, and I'll just go down the whole thing very quickly, because I think it all relates. Teenagers begin with a young people's fellowship down here, and that's where our young people come straight to fellowship. We have a Friday night Bible class, such as they have at Pennant Hills, where I was last night, which is very, very effective. It's a Bible study night, and it's a very, very good evening. It's very similar to yours, and it's a study time. So that's the link with the teenagers. We don't have many other links, just Saturday night and Friday night youth group. Children's a lot easier. There's a direct link that we have with the rally movement. Now, I'm going to say it again sometime tonight, but the rally movement has a tremendous leakage problem, and it's been this problem all its existence. We have, in New Zealand, something like 13,000 children. We don't see anything like 10% of those end up in assembly fellowship. So people say, what's the point? It isn't the rally's fault, and it isn't the rally's job. The job of the rally is, as suggested here on this chart, to pick up kids from the street, the unchurched kid. We're every boy, every girl. We don't turn anybody down. You're a Buddhist? That's okay, love. Come, you can sit on the mantelpiece and look fat. You know, what do you want to do? I wasn't suggesting you were, of course. You know, what are you over there, you see? You're, okay, well, come along. We do that too. We do all kinds of things that we don't have any barriers. We're just run by the open brethren, but we're just... For every boy's and every girl's rally. We have camps, we have hobbies, we have badges. And these kids come. Parents look at the badge list that you've got here, and they see it as a socially good thing. It's got discipline, which they're losing out on at home. It has a reaction to what is taught at school. They send their kids to rally. It's not difficult, really, to get children off the street to come to a rally if we run it right. That isn't a problem. The problem is to get those little kids into assembly fellowship, 25 years of age, sitting around the Lord's table, breaking bread and participating. That's the problem. And the rally movement was never designed to take a kid off the street and get him into assembly fellowship. It's just the first link. And if there isn't another link in the chain that picks that rally person up and takes him one step further and one step further, there will always be the leakage. I'm sometimes not a nice person. Or people think that. They're wrong, of course. Because I ask questions. And I was in a rally, and there was a rally parents' night, and it was a combined night. And they were telling me how good they were. They were humble, but they were proud of it. And they were telling me that they had had rallies in this particular church, to one of the first assemblies in New Zealand to ever have a rally. They'd had rallies for over 30 years. And they had their rallies here, junior and senior boys and girls. That's four rallies in their chapel building. They had outposts, places, the names I can't tell you because tapes end up all sorts of funny places. I hate them to get offended. But they had about four outpost Sunday schools in the country, boys and girls. So that's four here, so that's eight rallies. They've had that for 30 years. Now, come on, you'd be as bad as I would be. And you'd ask the question. You would have said, well, that's fantastic. How many folk have you got in assembly fellowship over 30 years? Now, that's a nasty question. You're not supposed to ask that question. But I did. And they said, there must be somebody, they couldn't name one. Now somebody must have slipped in, you know, surreptitiously without anybody noticing. Somebody must have got into fellowship, but they didn't notice. And they didn't like me. You're not supposed to ask questions like that. But the point I was trying to make with these characters was, it isn't your fault. For 30 years, you've had eight rallies. You've done your bit. You've got the kids off the street. You've brought them into rally. You have made them aware of the gospel, and many of them have become Christians. But there's been a breakdown in the process of taking them one step further. And it's tremendously important that churches understand that. That's why we've got that dirty great big arrow there. Because the problem is that that's the problem. And lots of youth workers get themselves into gear and they look around, you see, and they see all these tough people, you see, and all these hoods and, you know, these drug addicts, you see, and all these, and they go after, it's very spectacular. Very spectacular winning somebody that's in the world, that's 16 years of age and in the world. Very spectacular. I can never understand why they don't stop, think, and say to themselves, what does this church already possess? We have got, coming through the rally movement this year, 8 maybe, 10, 20 senior kids that this year will finish senior rally. I mean, they're not going to get around in their little shorts anymore, you know, got knees like some people, like I mentioned. And they're not just going to do that. They're now 14, 15 years of age, and they just opt out of rally. And they don't like the uniform. They just have grown out of it. It's not their fault. No, I mean, look at you. And then there's the senior Bible class kids. They're also beginning to drift a little bit. Now, surely the youth leader sits down and says to himself, what does this assembly already possess in its total structure? It's got senior rally kids coming through. Got to cater for them in my Saturday night youth group. We've got senior Bible class kids coming through. Well, I would say intermediate, because I think there should be a primary, an intermediate, and a senior Bible class. And I think the senior Bible class should be 18, 19, 20 years of age. That's the way we should work it. But that's a Friday night deal, so they can teach on Sunday. All right, we've got those kids. Let's cater for what we've already got. But time and again, the youth worker, and I'm not against youth workers, I am one, time and again, they totally ignore what they possess and go charging off on a fast camel to win the ungodly in the street, which is a good idea, but they sacrifice all the work that rally leaders and Bible class teachers and Sunday school teachers have put in picking a kid up, and at West Pennant Hills now, they've started about 7 years of age, isn't it? Four and a half, good grief. You know, they're still changing nappies. All right? I'm putting plugs in the top. All right? 4.5 years, that's a little kid. I mean, that's a little tiny kid. I mean, by the time that, no, it's a little kid, but a little kid. By the time that kid is 12 years of age, that's 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, they've been exposed to Christ for 8 years. 8 years! I mean, that's just about half an Apostle Paul, you know? I mean, that's some kid, they're only 12. And they will know an awful lot about the Bible. I mean, they will know all about Adam and Eve. I remember about Adam and Eve, when we read with our kids around the table, and we've done it three times around the Bible, rather, through the Bible with our kids. They forget the toughest one. She was born last. You know, all the little bad bits that we had left over, sort of. And she is so tough, but very, very gorgeous and honest. And the rule was that when we read around through the Bible with our family, the smallest sits on my knee, which they used to think was a privilege. Now they say, oh, dad, no, no, no. And she was just about 4.5 years of age. And we said, right, kids, it's time we went through the Bible again. Christina is old enough to understand. So we started in Genesis chapter 1, which is the place to begin. First book, most of you know that. And there are pictures. You know, each page has got a picture and a bit of a story, you see. And we turned over, and I was reading all about Adam and Eve, you see, and all about it. And she said, Daddy, are they in the neck? In our language, that means they ain't got no Tom. And I said, yes, darling, they're in the neck. They're Starkers. And she turned around to me in a big eye and said, Daddy, did they talk to God in the neck? Did they put their clothes on? And we began with her as a little pint size like you've got. You know, that little kid has been exposed to so much now. When you take these kids into your Sunday school class, they're real problems. I mean, they've been there, done that, know that, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4. You've got to be good. The dumbest job anybody ever gets is looking after the teenagers at Easter camp. You know, the 11s, 12s, 13s group at an Easter camp? I mean, they are the most abominable bunch you've ever come across. They're brought up with, you know, religious families. They've been through the Bible. And I have staff that take this and they say, Malcolm, what am I going to do? And I say, well, think of what they don't know anything about. Teach that. And one guy said, well, what about the minor prophets? Let's do it. That'll blow them. And so we did the minor prophets for 11s, 12s, 30s. Fantastic. They could say, oh, I know all about that. I've been there. My father told me. Shut up, because you don't know. They've begun at that age. But when they get to 13 years of age, the rally movement will no longer cope. There's got to be a link. Coming down here, we have Adventure Time, same as you do, happy hours, and to Sunday school. Dads, we don't in our church, we blew it, but in another church I was at, as I put in, we had a men's thing. Women are fantastic. They're also quite good. They get ladies together on any excuse. They get ladies for coffee hours and Bible readings and drop-ins and flop-ins and goodness knows what and creches and, oh, they're good. But we men are disastrous. We just can't seem to get unconverted men to come to anything that we have. So we started this monthly sort of a get-together where we cashed in, and there is a point in all this, we're getting there, we never, ever knocked on doors, because the Mormons had been before, and the Seventh-day Adventists had been before, and the Jehovah's Witnesses before, and here we were another one. And it's just tough. Our church grew, and it grew quite wonderfully, and we only visited known contacts. We only visited homes that had some contact with the church. Rally parents, Sunday school parents, families where the ladies came to the ladies' coffee hour, and so on. And they were the men. We had a lot of rally dads. It was a very simple evening. What do you do for a living? Pardon? Brilliant. I mean, what else could you want? Yeah. We've got a man here who'll tell you how to get a loan in 3 easy lessons. So what we would do, we would, you know, put our little notice out, but they got to know. And this evening we have a man that's going to come along and talk about maybe modern day banking or the modern day banking system or home budgeting or something that he would be skilled at and folk want to know about. This guy over here is a butcher.
he's going to talk about buying carving meat. You see, this person over here is a mechanic. He's going to talk about, remember this guy did, how to check your car when it's been to the garage to make sure that they've done it. That was a fantastic talk that night, how to make sure they've done everything. Tremendous. We had guarding and all sorts of things. But then what you've done, when you've done your bit, because you're just an ordinary Christian person, we used to get professionals along, you see, and that wasn't any good. We got full-time workers. Some of you all know Colin Graham. They didn't go. He was good, but they said, well, it's all right for him. I mean, he's got nothing else but religious all day. I've got to go to work, you see. So we got ordinary people, flesh and blood people like us, you see. And you would talk about banking, and then you'd say, and then we'd finish. And he'd say, I'd like to now tell you how I became a Christian. And you just told them. You virtually gave your testimony. If you felt skilled enough, you built it into a little message. If you didn't, you just gave your testimony. A discussion broke out, and we all just added our little 10 cents worth, and then we had supper. It was very, very simple. But it was done to reach the dads. And it was moderately successful. It worked. The best thing that we went into then were these home Bible study groups, and in our church, they've worked. When we had our own assembly, we would have a church, you know, the Wednesday night prayer meeting thing. And we were a church of then about 120. We would only get about 20 people. We started home Bible study groups, very carefully run, and we would have something like 80 or 90 people at that home Bible study groups. And they became very, very marvellous, as long as that they were carefully controlled and we knew what was going on. Fantastic. And they really did work and they grew. And one of those was an outreach one. Deliberately, we found, you know, one of our guys, could be Philip, who's good at this sort of thing, good with talking to guys, and he would run the outreach one. He might be running then this one, but he met every week for a Bible study. I ran, funnily enough, the ladies' one. I had that in the morning from 11 o'clock to 12 o'clock. No gimmicks. Remember going to a ladies' one a while ago, the other day, and when I got there, all in the, all giggling and tittering and, you know, all sort of funny. And I said, what's going on here? Well, Malcolm was still getting over last night. And I said, what do you mean last night? He said, well, we were sitting down last night thinking, now, we've got it all set. We've got supper done. We've got the demonstration done. We've got the speaker, Malcolm Barrow. Demonstration. Malcolm Barrow. Woo! We can't do that. They had a lady sort of lingerie, underwear demonstration. Going to have Brother Barrow there. So they changed it very, very quick. Had a dried flower arrangement. You know, probably wasn't much difference. But anyway, and that was nasty. But we ran this, and we just came, sat, talked for a few minutes, prayed, and we had type notes, and it was a Bible study for unsaved people in the district. We had about 12, 13, 14. Marvelous time. But it was another part. But these were parents whose kids came, A, to rally, or Sunday school, and who came to the ladies' coffee hour that you will see there somewhere that we had there. That was a link. So in other words, go down this mum's one. The coffee hour, that was the drag. That's where we got people in. We would have 80 or so come to that. It's not difficult to get ladies to come to coffee hour, because a lot more women work now because of women's liberty and all that sort of thing. Still a lot of ladies out there. It's sort of a therapy thing. You know, they come, bring their babies, they drop them off, and we sort of lock them up, you know. And then we have a morning, and we talk, and we sing, and we did a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a demonstration, and a message, and a cup of coffee, and they pick up their little babies again, unlock them, let them out, and home they go. A lot of married mothers dying out there in suburbia find this a very helpful thing. But we didn't get anywhere with the coffee hour. Nobody got saved in that coffee hour. We needed to have a link to that, which was the ladies' Bible class. So it's important that we think, now, where do I fit in all this? Where do I belong? And so you can see the idea of that kind of a chart. And it really is essential. The value of that is that we'll come to it next time when we make it work. So if you remember the chart, I'll talk about making the chart work. That's that one. To complement and continue the work. And we've talked about this, really, senior Bible class, teens and parents. A type of adult outreach where families can come. I don't know anything about this church, and I purposely have not asked. But there's a lot of churches, and this is not being critical, and this is not being in any way censored or anything like that. If I put my foot in it, okay, I'm sorry. But I'm thinking of our church, not yours. And we realized we were being a little bit selfish. We looked at Sunday and said, now what is the most convenient time on a Sunday for us to have the Lord's Supper? And we thought, well, 11 o'clock, that's the best time for us to have the Lord's Supper. So we had the Lord's Supper. Some people call it the morning meeting. It's not biblical. It's the Lord's Supper, the breaking of bread, whatever you like. And then we think, well, now what's the next best time to have a gospel meeting? 7 o'clock at night for the heathen. So we thought about this, and it seemed a little bit dumb to us. I mean, we are saints and saintesses. So we said, why don't we have our outreach in the morning and our Lord's Supper at night? Well, everybody held their hands up in horror, or many did, and said, if you did that, a lot would not come. That's the point. If the Lord's people won't come to the Lord's Supper on a Sunday night, are the Lord's people, really born again, wings, halos, a lot. If the Lord's people won't come to the Lord's Supper, which in the brethren circles I move in is the absolute, of fellowship, the Lord's Supper. If the Lord's people won't come to the Lord's Supper at 7 o'clock on a Sunday night, how can you expect the pagans to come to a gospel service when they're not even interested? Because somebody said, but we've all got little children. That's a lot of nonsense. I've had 3 kids, and my wife did. And we've always got them to church, and that's been no problem. We had our Lord's Supper, so no. But what we've done now, we've compromised. And we have a Bible hour from 10 o'clock to 5 to 11, cup of tea, Lord's Supper, 11:15 to 12:15. And then we have another service on a Sunday night. But we realized what we were doing, we were dividing the children and the parents. I think it's important that on a Sunday, families come to church. See, mum, dad, and the kid. Not much hope for the kid, but still, they brought him along. All right, and we sit together in church. What we tended to do was have the gospel service Sunday night for the adults, Sunday school in the morning for the children, and we never came to church as a family. And that's one of the reasons we often find it hard to win rally parents, because we don't have a function where the kids and the adults can come to church together. All right. He's going to close the windows for him. That's a marvellous spot. She's guilty because she left them open. So talked a little bit about that. Also here, and I never criticise elders, and I mean that very seriously, but elders need to be willing to visit homes. I have a personal rule. If you lead a person to the Lord at, say, rally, and the little kid goes home and gets thumped and told off and ridiculed, you know what I mean? It's no use in the little kid, oh, Uncle Malcolm, I went home last night, my father was really angry at me and he tore the book up. You don't tell a little kid what to do. That's like lobbing hand grenades over the wall, see? That's no good. Turn up. Tell you what, John, I'll come and tell Dad what you've done. Oh, you're sure? Be all right. Don't panic. We'll handle it. That's very different. Can you imagine a Philip Thorpe turning up somebody's door? I understand that you don't rear this Christianity stuff. He wouldn't do that. He'd come along and say, hello, I'm Philip. Oh, of course I know you, Philip. Yeah, come in. What's the problem? Well, looks like we've blown it. Your little guy last night stayed behind and he became what we call a Christian. Yeah, that's right. I want to talk to you about that. Well, I thought I'd just better come and explain what he's done. Now, I've done that, honestly, a number of times. I've never been thrown out, and the father said, oh, well, I didn't understand it, did I? I mean, I thought he was going to get sort of religious, Pope in a week. And he was panicking, super religious, and he was worrying. And so the elders need to be willing to turn up. The rally leaders can't do that. A lot of them aren't skilled enough. So you send them along. You've got little kids that come to your rally, and they're from the Jehovah's Witnesses, you see. And the parents are upset, so you grab a Tom Carson, send him. Pray for the parents, all right? So elders need, and in my book, elders are always willing to do it. It hasn't happened, because it wouldn't ever happen in Sydney, you're so well advanced. But it's funny sometimes, I go and stay with people, you see, I end up with one of these dear old ducks. And just after breakfast, you see, I said it didn't happen in Australia, you see. That's no duck, that's a spring chicken. We're getting somewhere. And this dear old duck, you know, we've just had breakfast, you see, and the husband's sitting there, you know, sort of picking his teeth, bitch poke. And Mr. Barrow, she said, I want to tell you something. I want your opinion. That's a lie. She wants me to agree with what she's going to say, because she's nasty. And she says, Mr. Barrow, I want your opinion. Do you know, I mean, it's right, isn't it, George, what I'm going to say, and poor old George, he says, yes, dear. I mean, the poor guy gave up a long time ago, you know, the honeymoon night. And she says, do you know what? We've been in this assembly, haven't we, George? We've been in this assembly for 60... Am I right, George? Yes, dear. And not one elder has ever darkened that... Not one elder's shadow has ever come across that... Am I right, George? They haven't, have they, George? Yes, dear. Now, what do you think about our elders, Mr. Barrett? I mean, our elders? Do you think they're elders? Not one in 16 years ever darkened our door. And I think, right, old lady, let's have a go. You know, fight's on. Round one. Because I will never criticize elders. I mean, some are thick. But that's God's problem, not ours. So I say to her, well, I'm surprised at this. Was there ever a time you wanted them to call? Oh, many a time, isn't there, George? I mean, when our, you know, when our Agatha was sick, you know, that was probably the bit. What you want to do yesterday, you know. And yeah, many a time. And I'd say, well, lady, if you are serious, there's two ends to a telephone. And you could have rung them up. Now, she doesn't often iron my shirts for a couple of days. But I'm right. Elders should have visited, sure. But the poor guys are done. If they turn up, she would have said, she's the sort of said, what are what they wanted? What have we done wrong? What have you been up to? You know? Wonder why they were here. I wonder. In that, so when they turn up, they get yelled at. When they don't turn up, they get yelled at. They can't win. So what we do in our church, we tell them, we're going to visit you twice a year, but if you want us more than that, you've only got a ring. Now, all that was to try and stress that my experience has been, if elders are invited specifically to visit, they'll always go. When I come to a place like this, I have a little rule that I shared with Graham, I guess, early when we began to communicate in 61. And I don't mind who I visit when I come to a place like this, as long as the person I'm visiting wants me to come. They want me to come, I'm happy to visit anybody. But this having a great long list of all the people that, you know, kill the last lot of... That's a waste of everybody's time. And I found elders good at visiting a home. And often the rally leader can't. So they need to be willing to do that. All right. I keep losing my pens. We're down this next straight here. I had a pair of glasses. What have I done with them? Better put them on. Talking about byproducts, that's what I've just talked about, and we'll see that. Just remember that word byproducts when we come to our next session at 10 past, would you? The fact that we must try and get from every aspect of assembly work all the secondary things. All right, down this list. Hang on, it's good having that breeze. Prayer support. Now, it's very important in the assembly that the assembly pray for the rally. We're talking now particularly about the rally. And I've had people, I had one lady in a church where we were running a rally. She said, Mr. Bell, I want to tell you now that I do not agree with rallies. And she was, you know, one of those sort, and there's a lot of her. And she didn't agree with rallies. And I said, I'm sorry about that. You know, we've got a lot of kids coming. This was the rally where my wife and I had five rallies in. She didn't agree with it, see? So I thought, I've got to win this dear old soul. Well, she wasn't old. She was 50, I suppose. And it's pretty young. And when you're 60, it's young. And at 70, it's younger. So I went to her one Sunday morning and said, look, I know you don't agree with rallies. That's right, I don't. No time for rallies at all. Don't talk to me about rallies. I said, I'm not talking about rallies. I wonder if you'd be, you know, kind enough to pray for these three families that come along to rally. Now, I know you don't agree with rally, but would you pray for the kids? That's sneaky. You see, because she's super spiritual, that's why she doesn't agree with the rallies. And being super spiritual, she's got to be prepared to pray for those kids. So she got these kids. And I just made sure every Sunday, oh, by the way, your kids were at rally last week. Oh, is that right? But then one day came, and I was able to say to her, guess what? She said, what? And I said, the little boy, his name was David Skinner. I said, you know, David Skinner, you should pray for the Skinner family. Do you know that David last night became a Christian? And I was getting through to her, and she was having problems with God because he wasn't supposed to bless something she didn't agree on. An effective Sunday school. Nobody charges the Sunday school children a sub. But we charge the rally kids a sub. Now, I'm not suggesting that is wrong. But I'm suggesting that sometimes it's a bit unrealistic. And I believe the assembly has to understand. I was talking to one lady, and their assembly are quite happy, and they paid over an account last year for $600 for the rally movement. That's marvelous. When I was in an oversight where I was an elder, they wouldn't give a cent for the rally. And I struggled and battled and said, what about follow-up? Okay, not badges, not a gym horse, just follow-up. Oh, well, that's a problem. How much do you reckon a kid's worth for follow-up a year? Come on, how much? And they said, well, Malcolm, what sort of money are you talking about? And I said, well, what about $5 a year for follow-up for each kid? That's not much. If you've got 100 kids, only $500. This is a generation of the future. That's worth it. You know, when I go and see some of the places people live and the cars they drive, I'm not against that. I'm all for it. I'm not against that because I usually try to borrow them. But I realize the Church of God can afford anything it wants to if it wants to. It's just got to want to. I mean, this $1,500 insurance is peanuts for all the assemblies in Sydney. Good gracious me, that's hardly a dollar a person in all the years. There must be 1,000 people surely in your assemblies here. It's chicken feed. Fish cake. And you should, I'm not suggesting that they should, but I'm making the comparison that Sunday school seems to have one law and rally seems to have another law. And by these two laws, we tend to divorce rallies a little bit. Now, I know that rallies have camps and we have a physical side, hobbies, badges, uniform. I am not saying that the rally should not have a sub. I'm not saying that. I am saying that the assembly needs to feel a genuine responsibility as they do for the Sunday school as well. That's what I'm trying to say. Take a long time to do it. Hang on up. All right, physical support. Transport. When I ran a Sunday school, I wouldn't let my teachers transport kids to Sunday school unless they were en route. It belongs to the church. The church transports kids, not the teachers. They went, if this little kid to get dressed, that little hotter to get tied up, that one, they arrive in a car full of kids and are supposed to teach a lesson. My teachers were, it was a law, part of the deal, you will be at Sunday school 10 minutes early. They have your class ready, everything set out, everything done. The kids come to your class, you mark the roll, you hear their memory verse. And then when the bell rings, you all come out of your classrooms into the assembly little thing. We had our sing and the rest of it, and you went back to your classes. You stayed in your class 5 minutes after you were finished in case you were needed to counsel. I mean, that's basic stuff. I'm not saying anything marvelous. But if they arrive 10 minutes late because they're waiting for kids to get dressed and it all in a stew, they can't be their best. It's a church responsibility. And I believe with rallies, it's a church responsibility. And I believe very strongly. I support co-ed rallies, by the way. But I wouldn't talk about that here because I don't think you are co-ed. It's none of my business. But I certainly believe this very strongly, that in every boys' rally, there should be a lady. You know, drop you in the middle of a boys' rally, the boys' rally would change. And it's often necessary to have a man, a married man, in a ladies' rally. Just a guy that maybe gets a supper and just helps. You've got to choose the right guy. He's not going to try and run the show and dominate and tell them what to do. Anyway, they'd stomp on him anyway and wash him through the floorboards. But it's rather helpful. And I found that a tremendous help. And certainly in the area where we had rallies, we had to lock the door and we had a telephone. And of course a church must have a telephone. Because one night, a whole lot of hoods, you know, were out there and the people were scared to go. So we had a man. And every night, a man went. The same take, just slipping it in. You know, the creation of Sunday school. I know it's not a subject, but I believe in team teaching, one. And I believe you need at least one man in the creche. You know, so if you had little girls running, you need a man there. When little kids come to Sunday school, all they find is, you know, they link Jesus with women, which is nice. But I always had men down there, and I couldn't get any men, so I wrote a roster out for the elders. And most elders have grandfathers. I mean, you stick Arthur Dow down there, he's cake. He'd be in his element with little 4s and 5-year-olds. He wouldn't have a problem. He's only on this Sunday. He'd bounce them on his lap, and he'd bounce them around, see, and take them off and lose them, bring them back. And then the next week, you see, we'd have somebody else. See, Philip there's got a little brother, put him on. See? It wasn't a problem, but it needs to be shared. Pastoral care of the leaders. It's important, and I think the elders should insist on knowing. They shouldn't discover that last week the rallies went for a camp. They should have been told before the camp was even planned that there's going to be a camp. Not that we had a camp last week. Oh, is that right? They should know. In fact, I believe the elders should be asked, is it okay with you guys if we run a rally camp? I mean, what are elders for? Remember, they've got to give an account to us of how they led us, so they need to know. That's a two-way thing. They don't mind. But if something went wrong and somebody was killed, they're the poor guys that have got to line up and face it. The week before my wedding, I was at a camp and went on these sledge things. And they're giving all the kids rides on the sledge, and then they got me on with another guy, and instead of going round nicely, they were going about 60 miles an hour, I went down the pallet. Of course, I came off and skinned all that, so I'd rode up there, pushed my shorts right up. And you know what a grass burn's like? So a wedding, I was walking like this, you know, still moving like that. Now, that was all right with me. I mean, I was a great, big, thick kid. That's fine, just about to get married anyway, and not off the shelf. Fine. But imagine that happened to a little kid. I was at a camp, and a little boy fell off a hedge and broke his leg. And he pretended nothing was wrong. It was a cauliflower fracture, whatever that means. Something to do with a cabbage, I think, or a Brussels sprout. And we were way out the sticks. It was Sunday morning. And it wasn't until about 4 o'clock we got him to hospital, which was sad. Anyway, we got him to hospital. They found out what it was, and they glued him up, put a plaster on it, see. Well, I was staying with the rally leader. He said, oh, Mr. Brown, the mother's going to take us to court over this kid. It was 7 hours from the accident to when we got medical care, and she's going to sue us. What do we know? I was representing the rally movement full time then, and they said, seeing that you represent the rally movement, you better go and see her. So, here we go. Righto, John Wayne. And I hit on a bright and said, Lord, what are we going to do? You never back off. This lady, I got there, I said, I wore my uniform, see, and I turned up. And she said, oh, you're the rally man, are you? And I said, yes, that's right. Oh, I want to talk to you, come in here. So as a matter of fact, Mr. Zerto, I want to talk to you. So we got inside. I said, just a bit, before you start, I would like to say a few things, because I've come here to lodge a complaint with you about your son. You know, lead the charge, don't back off. What do you mean it was 7 hours? I said, just a minute. One, he was on a hedge that was out of bounds. Two, he was climbing around the top, which is definitely out of bounds. Three, he fell off, which was dumb. Four, we checked him. I tried to check his wrist, and he said he could move it. There was no pain when it was hurting like mad. He was dishonest. Five, he went a lot of trouble. It wrecked the whole camp. Then we had to make a special trip. We knocked the camp off her to come here. I've come to tell you that your boy created a tremendous amount of trouble in our rally movement. That's why I'm here. Now, you're going to say? Yeah, it's very different. Now the point is, I could do that. I'd been around a bit. But a rally leader leading a junior rally who's only 21 years of age isn't going to do that. He's going to be a nervous wreck. He's going to sit up all night worrying about it. So you send along a Charles Williams, you see. You know, you grab somebody, this guy over here, I don't know his name, so you would send him along. It wouldn't roll over him. He would get it together. Alright? I just opened my mouth to change feet. Apparently I've just done it. Probably a rowdy parent came in here by mistake. Anyway, we'll get you saved by tonight. Just hang in there. Alright, but they need to know what's happening. And they care for the leaders. Who leads the leaders? This is it. I know I've gone over time, but we'll shorten the other end because I'm gracious. But you know, who looks after me? I'm going to be nasty. Be it my last, I've got one more night to go. Nobody. No, nobody. Nobody's come to me in the month I've been here, said Malcolm. I've come to pray with you, with your schedule that's a busy one. I think I've done 58 or 59 messages. Most have been different messages while I've been here in these 30 days. Most I've had to prepare at dear Mrs. Young's table. At last she's got a lounge back. It's been covered in acetates and pans, and she hasn't had a lounge. And she's also fed me with cups of coffee from about 7:30 in the morning, hasn't it been, till I've been picked up at night. It would have been nice if she said, Malcolm, I've just come to pray. You've got a heavy schedule. Could I just come and spend some time praying with you? Nobody's done that. Anybody feel a louse? But you know, at home, I'm a full-time worker. Every Monday afternoon, somewhere about 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, Peter Robinson, I hear his car rattle across the crossing, he comes to minister to my wife and I. And he comes into the camp, sits down with us, in my study. Judy comes through, she knows he's coming, he comes through, he just reads the scriptures. It doesn't matter whether you know it or not. That's the marvellous thing about this book. You can counsel, I could go, and I know he won't be embarrassed, but we all respect the gentleman. I could go to Mr. Tom Carson if he was ill. And I could read a passage. I heard him minister on Ephesians 1. He knows it back to front. I could read to him Ephesians 1. He'd get blessed by it. He knows it better than me. He knows it inside out. I just know it. He understands the text. I can just read it. But he'd get blessed if I went and visited him and read it. The Word of God has that power by the Spirit of God. And Peter comes along and he just sits and sometimes, well, the first time it happened, he read the scriptures. We talked for a bit. And then he prayed for Judy and me, and I didn't pray. And I said, darling, aren't you going to pray for Peter? No, I'm not. He came to minister to me. It is nice to be ministered to. It is rather a privilege when somebody comes along and says, Malcolm, just want to pray with you. Let's just pray. That's important. And you know, your rally leaders, do we ever check them up? Now, because I don't want this on tape. In our assemblies, rally night, you're exhausted. It's nice, you know, I was a Sunday school teacher, I think, I don't know how many years, probably 5 or 6 years as a Sunday school teacher. I started when I was 17. And I was never asked, Malcolm, how's your class? I've learnt now, and I find this, excuse, you're a teacher, aren't you? And I say, can we talk about your class? And I'll make an excuse to find our teachers in there, and the other elders do it. And we just sit down, tell me about your class. How many kids have you got? What ages are they? Any problems? Have you got your roll book? Let's just, any kids we could pray for right now? And we just pray together. Now, that the importance of that is not just the prayer. This person feels somebody cares enough to ask me. Do you know, sometimes you can run a rally all year and no elder can. I'm not roaming down the elders. That sounds if I am. I'm not. But I think elders have to realize the responsibility, and leaders in the church and others need to realize. It's good if they come along. Phil, you've got a new rally out there. How's it going? You've got enough. You've got everything you need. Anything you particularly want. Transport. You've got enough finance. You've got any kids you want to pray for? And the guy will be, you know, thrilled out of his socks. And this is the job of senior, not elders, just senior people in the church that can do this. See, the rally's got to be brought in as part of the assembly. We're just about finished. Don't worry. So that's what I'm talking about there. Involvement and spiritual development of the leaders. In other words, when a kid becomes a leader, he grows himself. There's a spiritual growth there. They're actively involved. The rally leaders get tired. They need refreshing, as I've mentioned. The tenure of their leadership needs to be reviewed. You know, rally leaders get weary, and you might like to say, how about a year off? You're not firing the person, just, it might be something to think about. Our elders, we take it in turns. There's 9 of us. 9. And with a couple of guys that join us. And every year, one person is still an elder, but he doesn't attend the structural planning things. He has that year off. And he applies himself to study and visitation. But all the other things, he's free. Of course, if we have an emergency, he's zapped in. And that's another thing, in case I forget, to those that seeing we've got some visitors, our oversight or our elders meeting on a Monday night is always open to all the assembly. We like them to tell us they're coming, but anyone can attend our elders meeting, men and women, can come and share a problem, discuss their work. They can never say, we can't get at you elders. The door is always open. We like them to tell us, sure, but, and they do come. Something nice the other day came, we were having a bit of a problem, and the young people all turned up, unannounced. The whole, well, about 20 of them, most of the senior ones, all turned up. And they knocked on the door, we said, come in, and they all poured in and sat around our table, because we always have in the chapel, and they all stood there, and the leader, who wasn't the leader, but the leader of the gang, said, look, we know you've got a problem in the assembly, we know there are some difficulties, you know, we know about it, we just want you to know that we really love you, men, we're supporting everything you do, and we are praying for you. And we've written this letter, and we'd just like you to have it. Now, the youngest of those would be about 17, the oldest would be about 1920. But wasn't that fact? You know, idea what that did to us. And I can still see one or two elders, tears pouring down their cheeks. They know what was going on. They knew the problems that we were facing, the difficulties. And these young people got together, let's go and tell the elders we love them. That's what they were doing. And it means a lot to say, I care. And it needs to be done. So that's involved as well. And that's what I'm talking about there. I believe they need to be commended by the assembly. They don't just join rally work, but the elders know what's going on. They're a part of the assembly. If there's an accident, the elders have to front up. If there's an immorality problem, the elders are landed with it. So obviously they've got to know who the leaders are. I didn't know you had that person as a leader. We elders were never asked. Well, the elders should know who the leaders are. And then also to stop the leakage. In New Zealand, it's about 95. I say 90. And I said, remember the chart we had. All right. Well, we're going to have a sing, and I'm still stopping at the right time. We're stopping at 9 o'clock, aren't we? The thing is, how do we make it work? And I'd like to think that this was helpful. There are some simple, practical kind of things, and I've just written down things that we've done. The first thing is a quarterly meeting of elders, leaders, lady workers, and others. Maybe even more often than that. I got involved in a very little church, a little assembly. My wife and I were in full-time work. We worked at two assemblies, or I'd worked at one, then we got married, worked at another assembly, and that was a very strong, established assembly, and that was good. But then we went to this other one, and they were about to sell the building. And we just felt so convinced that this was where we should go. And God did a marvelous thing for the assembly, and it grew. But in those early days, we were just 15 believers. That's all we were. My wife and I made the 15. So that's a very little assembly. It grew enormously to a Bible hour of something like 450, and God really blessed. But the thing that did it wasn't just enthusiasm and these other things. The thing that did it was the fact that here was a church prepared to work. If I may dare say one comment, that we've enjoyed, and I'm sure you do it here, but in some areas this is not the case, we don't have this one-night ministry here and there. In our assemblies, for instance, even me, I would go to a place for 12 weeks. Could you imagine me for 12 weeks? but people survive. And that's Sunday morning adult Bible class. Like, I'm back there at a place called Witiora. There'll be about 120 in the Bible class. Then a break for morning tea, Lord's Supper, ministry of the Lord's Supper. That's my second bang. And then the service at night. I start about 7:15 to 8:30. And we finish right on the button of 8:30. And I'll do that for 12 weeks. And the thing is that it's a value because people get to know you, they bring their friends, they get to understand the way you speak, and parents come along. And I normally manage to get all the young folk sitting in the front rows down here, and we have quite a time. You know, we make sure that they're awake, kick them otherwise. Some of the assemblies, we went through this business where we had a different speaker every Sunday night, or a guy only came for two nights and went away, and you were just getting the value of that person. And I would say in your rally outreach, it takes a while for folk to get to know somebody. They're just getting to know this guy who may be good, and then there's somebody else that they don't click with. And they've got to learn to get used to him again. And by the time they've done that, whoops, somebody else. And I'll say this, when you've got 12 weeks to work at an assembly, when I was back in an assembly, we did, you know, things like the book of Hebrews and the book of Ephesians, and I've just finished 1 Corinthians, and that was 8 weeks on 1 Corinthians, three times on a Sunday. You can work on it. You can build on each chapter and what you said last week. And the church tends to grow, too. A friend of mine that I'd love to have you out here, he takes a lot of the ministry in the assembly. It's not a one-man ministry. He's not the elder. He's just one of many. But he does most of the Sunday nights. And in February, when they began mid-January, in February, they had 25 new families join that church because of the quality of the teaching. And the quality, you watch any church in the world that's growing, and it is growing basically on the quality of the ministry. You can have all the mechanics you like, but I'll say this, it's the Word of God that attracts people. And you can do everything else, but it's the ministry of this. And I know some churches, not here, and I know them, and there's some brethren, she said, Malcolm, you know, we've had all these long sermons, the longest we will allow anyone to preach in our church is 10 minutes. That is ridiculous. I haven't even coughed by then. And there is a difference. And those churches, they really won't survive. They'll have a bubble for a while, lots of singing, lots of clapping, lots of noise, lots of strumming and belting and banging, but eventually you need the sustenance of the Word of God. And little kids can appreciate it too. So, this quarterly meeting, what we did in this place, we used to meet every Sunday afternoon from 2 to 3, and we'd plan everything. And as our church began to grow, and people came back that had left because they had a grudge and got off to the baptism, and they began to come back, we had this meeting regularly, but we had everybody. Now, it was carefully chaired, but for instance, pick on you. You might be the leader of the ladies' fellowship. Now, that's important that we know what's going on with you. We elders need to know. Now, our wives might tell us, but it's nice if you tell us. And then you're in charge of the girls' rally. You're in charge of the young people's, all right? And so on. And we all met. Now, we didn't waffle on and have reports. We just met to see if there was anything we needed to coordinate. So you would say, well, we've had 5 new ladies come to our coffee hour over the last month. You had their names. And I think that you as the young people's leader could visit those homes because I think they've got some kids that would like to come. Or I think if you visit them, then you've got the rally. You know, the rally children would like to come. Or you would say, well, we've had 5 new girls start rally. They've been coming now for 4 or 5 weeks. I'm sure we wouldn't lose them if you were to invite the mothers to come to your women's fellowship. So we tried to coordinate everybody that came to a church. We had a little card system, and if you had a new rally girl, you just filled in a little slip of paper, handed it into a married couple, a fairly senior couple. They wrote out 2 cards, one was the master, one was the other, so that if Philip was visiting a home, he gets the card, visits, fills it in, and then hands it back on a Sunday. Now, that didn't mean to say that you couldn't visit who you liked. Of course you could. But it was rather good if you were doing visitation to find out who had been before and what was going on there. And it's just plain, straight, simple, common sense. I'm not saying anything new. But we had some long time ago now, a crusade with Colin Graham. We didn't do any cold counseling or cold visiting. We had 40 people come to the Lord. Every single one was a contact. Everyone. Either through rally, young people's, women's fellowship, whatever. Everyone had a link already, and we just asked them to come. And that's a lot easier to say, now you're a rally parent, we've had your children for the last few years, we're having some special services, call them what you like, don't call them a crusade. Some special services, and we've got a Mr. So-and-so that's coming, and we'd love you to come. We're starting off with a rally church parade maybe, and we'd like you to come after that. But you need to cash in on what you already possess. A youth coordinator, that's not a full-time worker. I think in a church, it's helpful if there are a number of jobs that are recognized. The first one is a guy who coordinates all the youth work. Now, he doesn't tell anybody what to do. He doesn't, you know, go tearing off and tell the ladies how to run their ladies' rally or anything like that, or the young people. He just knows what's going on. He mainly coordinates the studies that are happening. So he would go to the girls' rally and say, what studies are you doing this year? And you'd have it all done for the year, obviously. And you'd say, well, we're going to do the Book of Acts or something like that. Fine. And what are you doing? And he just knows what's happening. When a rally is going away for a camp, he knows who's leading it, who's responsible, what the young people are doing. And he just simply coordinates the whole youth work. He's not a boss. He's not in full-time work. He doesn't legislate for anybody. He doesn't tell anybody what to do. But he's there as an advisor and a helper. But if we want to know anything as elders, we ring him up. His name is Roger Black, and we ring up Roger. We've got a house next door to the chapel. He flats in there. And he does happen to have work 2 days full-time for the assembly, but that's beside the point. And we just ring him up and say, Roger, you know, what's happening? He would attend our elders' meeting once a month for an hour and tell us exactly where we are with the young people, so we know what's going on. Then another person here is the person that runs the ladies' fellowship. These coffee hours, Bible studies, visitation, all needs to know what's happening. Actually, there's one it's down here, okay. Home Bible study coordinator. I'm a great fan for home Bible studies, but they need some sort of coordinator. Not our subject tonight, so I'm not going to talk about it. But they have a tremendous value. They really do. And if you want to chat about it afterwards, fine. Somebody looking after the systematic exposition. You know, what are we teaching in this church? And we have a 5-year plan, and we work. Now, that doesn't mean say you're limiting the Spirit of God. I was helped by Graham Hayden, who has planned my stay here anyway to the last detail. I'm very grateful to Graham for what he's done. But in most cases, he told me what the assembly wanted. The men's conference, you're doing Ephesians, chapter 2, chapter 3, chapter 4, chapter 6, or whatever it was. That's what you're doing. Go to Parramatta, you're doing the Book of Judges. You're going to this place, you're doing that. And you know exactly what is expected. The Spirit of God works just the same. At Oakley, you're doing Hebrews. Had a marvelous time at Oakley. And you're not limiting the Spirit of God by telling people what to do. You're just sitting down carefully, planning, thinking wisely. God wants us to use it. So this person, once a year or twice a year, makes sure that we have a special teaching session on some subject. Someone making sure that evangelism takes place. Now, I'm all for what some churches in Australia are doing, and that's this lifestyle evangelism. But the Bible does talk about proclaiming the gospel with an evangelist. It is a gift. And there does come a time when you've got to stand up and tell them where it's at and preach the gospel, as Luis Palau will do next September. A visitation coordinator. Now, that was interesting. When I was in full-time work at the second church, that was my job. We had a Mr. Blair who, his job was to look after the visitation of all the folk in the assembly. That was his job. My job, plus others, of course, wasn't the only thing I did, was to make sure that the visitation of all the fringe contacts was done. So you're a rally leader, you're visiting your rally, terrific. But so all you do is say, Malcolm, just want you to know that I'm visiting the Smiths, the Browns and the Jones today. That was all, just a phone call. And I said, righto, got that, terrific. I just knew they'd been done, that's all. I got a whole list of fringe contacts, 400 as a matter of fact, and that's a lot, and I just put a tick. Because after a while, I want to look down that list and find there's a whole lot of people never been visited. That was my job, to visit them, or make sure that somebody did. This other man was visiting the saints, so that, I don't know whether you like to go to the hospital there for a month, but this young lady here is in hospital, and she's just had her tonsils out, you see. And that's all very nice. I remember the first person I ever visited had their tonsils. I took them a bar of chocolate. However, you grow up, you learn. But never forgotten that was in Christchurch. So what would happen is, you see, the first couple of days, everybody visits the poor soul when she's still under anaesthetic and can't move anyway. So you just ring up Mr. Blair. Mr. Blair's going to go and see, you know, what's your name? Sorry? Sharon. All right, I was going to see Sharon. She said, look, hang on, you're the fourth person to go today, and I don't think it's a good idea. Would you mind if you could go tomorrow? I mean, he didn't say you couldn't go. He didn't dominate. But he knew that tomorrow nobody was going to visit. So he would ring up someone and say, look, no one's visiting. And would you please pop along and visit her? These people didn't dominate. They didn't take the responsibility off people. They just made sure it happened. That's all. and that was my job. And I remember people used to think I had a fabulous memory. I'd visit somebody and a home, and the little boy was in the tub, and I'd bath him because something else had gone wrong there, and I'd finish bathing him and put a towel around him, bring him in the house, and mother would say, "Oh, Malcolm, you didn't have to do that." And I said, "That's fine." She was a rally parent. And, you know, I said, "How are things?" "Oh, I had a terrible time. The budgie just died and the dog got run over and I think grandfather's going to shoot through." And she would tell me everything. When I got outside, I'd just go along a little bit. I'd fill it in. Budgie died, dog run over, grandfather shooting through, and I dried the sun, see? Now, it would be maybe 6 weeks before I got back. And I would say, "How's it going?" "Oh, fine." "Go to the budgie?" "Why?" "Well, last time I was here, you were just like, 'Oh, did you remember that? And the dog was run over. How's the dog? And how's your grandfather?'" "My word, what a memory you've got." "No, I never let on. I could just read the card, that's all." But you know, it made a tremendous impact. Because, you know, you'd like people to care. Do you know how to shut people up? Do you ever have one of those people in your church? We had one in our church. And he talks and talks and talks and talks and talks and talks, talks. And far worse than me. My father-in-law said, my problem was I was injected with a gramophone needle at birth. But anyway, this guy was a pain. I watch you do, you'd say, "By the way, Philip, have you met Mr. Sansa?" "Him and Sansa, would you meet Philip?" And then you'd back off, you see. And as you drove by, this guy who was a visitor of the church would see you drive by, I'll get you. He'd still be there at tea time. This guy was talking to him. Do you know what you do with a guy like that? You talk about yourself. And they zoop, they're no longer interested. You say, "Is that right?" "Well, I'd like to tell you what happened to me." They're not interested in what happened to you. You just talk about yourself. Shut them up as easy as wink. It's an amazing thing. Visitation is important because people like to think you care. And when you go along and sit and you remember the last visit, they're interested in that. And rally kids, parents need to be visited. All right. An advertising PR person. You had a swim thing. That's worth telling the radio about. You're beginning the year. We have a, what's it called, newsline or something on a Saturday morning. And you can ring in, as long as you ring in 2 or 3 days before, and they check back and ring back so it's not a hoax. And you can advertise your rallies or anything you're doing, and it goes over the radio. It's all free, and it's marvellous. And we like to get ourselves on that if we can. But somebody making sure it gets done. You know, the newspaper ad for your church. Don't put in the church ads, remember? Don't put your church ad in the church ads. Put it in the amusement column under the pictures. Pagans aren't going to look in the church ads. A church news sheet, a seminar, and so on. Creative ministry. Someone looks after drama. I was at, where were we last time? Campsie, was it? Last Sunday, weren't we? And they had the puppet thing. I don't know where those kids came from. They were good. You know, they were so good every Sunday they should be somewhere doing something. They were good folk. It was simple, but it was well done, and the coordination was topped, and it was most enjoyable. And it added, and drama does a tremendous amount. Who's heard the story of the littlest angel? You've heard the story? Marvellous. For those who haven't, it's so simple that, you know, as long as you've got the script, it's of two angels in heaven, you see, is the idea. And I haven't finished with that, yes I have. And they're looking over the parapet of heaven, and they're looking at the universe, and they've just got a sheet on. And this big angel's telling the little angel just that, you know, that their master made all this, and it's wonderful, and he goes on to how marvellous it is. And the angel, "Oh, isn't he marvellous to make all this?" He says, "Oh, what's that dirty little spot? Oh, that's the earth. Well, isn't it dirty and black?" And he describes it. And then says, "What's that little bright spot in it?" "Oh, that's Calvary, where our master died." And the angel just talks about the Lord Jesus leaving heaven and dying on the cross in the most sinful planet. Oh, it's just two people. But you've got to know the script. It's fantastic. Do you know, I got up to preach. My job, they said, "Now, when we finish, Malcolm, if we get it right, you just come straight in and you just preach." Do you know, the place was spellbound. You know, there were some tears on some eyes. You know, I just got quietly up and said, "Thank you, folk. We're going to read the Word of God together." And you didn't have to preach. Now, preach, you just talk about to them. You know, drama has a tremendous place. I'm sure the Lord Jesus used it in his parables with tremendous effect. The sower and the seed. I'm sure there's a guy sowing seed. And drama in the church is a tremendous help. And it's so simplistic. And I know our youth group are all involved in it. And now they've started writing their own scripts, which makes some of us a bit nervous, but a lot of them come out very, very well. But they're doing something together, better than listening to some heavy rock, you know, on a Saturday night, being idiots. They're sitting in somebody's house, planning a drama, being idiots. All right? So that's that one. A monthly news sheet report. So in the monthly news sheet, the rally gets into it. Prayer items for the home groups comes off this. Assembly coordination chart. We've looked at that, done that, been there. Then we've talked about cooperation, liaison, coordination. Cooperation between all the groups, the women's fellowship, the rally, the youth group. I spent a lot of time talking about that. Must have got the idea. We share the product of what we're gaining. A liaison between each group, like happened at West Pennant Hills. Everybody was involved that night for that outreach. The whole church was involved. The whole church got a blessing. And that's tremendous. I just went up the back there and thought, goodness me, they're setting supper for us. And I noshed some of the drink, which I shall now drink in front of you. I mean, you can just have water if you like. Look what I got. Straight out the fridge. Oh, that's beautiful. Mmm. Oh, loves. But they're having a 50th wedding anniversary tomorrow for somebody who's been married 50 years. See? Not you or me. But you know, they're deep, and they're having a ball of a time up there. And tomorrow will be fantastic. The whole, I guess that tomorrow lunchtime for these dear couple will be as great a blessing for the unity of the church as anything you could do. Because they'll be together doing something that they're going to enjoy. And the same needs to be done with rallies and youth groups and these other things. A oneness together. And then coordinating the whole thing, we've said that. Right, down the last straight. Coming here, overseers need to oversee, leaders need to lead. There needs to be a report mechanism so they know what's going on, what's happening to this. I believe elders need to be seen by the rally leaders. They need to turn up and be willing to share, to help in visitation. Go with a junior rally leader and visit the home. Visitation of parents' homes, as we've seen here. Parent functions. It's so important that these folk turn up. There is nothing more soul-destroying than the rally movement puts something on and nobody from the church turns up. We did for our young people, as our youth group, we did it each year, but the first year was the worry. We split our youth group into three. One, two, three. You had one block, you had another block, you had another block. You studied one mission outfit, maybe Mission to Lepers. You did MAF and you did Andes. We still had our youth group, but the finale came on the last two Saturday nights. We spent Saturday building things to sell. And then last Saturday we put it all together. They had a wall each, so you had that wall there for what are you doing, MAF. And you put all, you know, you had 6 months to get this together. And the whole wall was covered in posters and pictures of aeroplanes and mountains and all the rest of it. And you're doing Mission to Lepers, and they had, we actually did this, Mission to Lepers, and they had little shoes they make out of rubber tires and pictures and all the rest of it and the cost and everything else. And then someone did the Andes, I guess, and there'd be a mountain drawn and the whole thing. You had 20 minutes each to do your thing. But these kids had worked hard for 6 months, you know, apart from youth group. And I needed the whole church to turn up. And if the church didn't turn up, then these kids were going to be so, you know, distraught. And the young people, and we've often educated the elders, or the older people, not to touch Saturday night, that's ours, hands off. And then when we want them to, they don't. So we personally wrote to every Christian in the five assemblies on the North Shore. We got the rolls, you know, the prayer list, and every family had a personal handwritten letter telling them we're having a special missionary night. We've been working on this for 6 months and you are particularly invited. It wasn't just, dear sir, the name of the person. And we would like you to come. And if we knew the family, we'd put the family's names in there, you see, filled down and so on, and we'd put it in, that we want you to come. And by the way, there'll be a sale of work towards missionary activity. And if your wife would like to bring some food, that would be helpful for supper. We had a marvellous time. The place was packed. The young people were rewarded. We took the cakes off the sisters at the door, zapped them around the back, cut them into little bits, and sold them to them afterwards when they went down there for supper. A cup of coffee and a piece of cake. We made a lot of money that night, and the elders were unwise enough to say, we will go you $2 for every dollar you make. And it was tremendous. But we're able to give a lot of money to missionary work. And it didn't hurt anybody. And everybody got a lot of pleasure. But it would have gone fut if people hadn't turned up. And when you've got particular, you know, some of you are senior people. And if something goes fut, you're mature enough to get over it. But our junior leaders aren't mature enough. And it's important the church helps out. All right. Knowledge of the finance. What you spend your money on. It's good to have a balance sheet. Supporting training. Weekends. Encouraging folk to come. Maybe paying the fees of others. Elders helping with devotions, as we've already mentioned. I believe elders should appoint the leaders, as we said this afternoon. The leader might go to the elder, well, I think so-and-so is the good person, but they do the job. And, of course, turning up at things like church parades. So it's important that this is seen. Last chart. Is everything getting blown away anyway? And that's just this. Integrating these folk. How do we get kids into the rally? Well, it's all but what I've been trying to say. It's not just a single thing. There's a rally study night. Some rallies have done that. The devotional emphasis in our devotions. Co-opting the young people one-to-one to take over a rally kid. Sunday rally Bible class, as I mentioned that assembly did. Getting into individual families. Bring them along to the regular youth group. Maybe an intermediate Saturday youth group. Because if these are all 18 years of age, they don't want 14-year-old rally kids. So, and that's what we've got. We call it the 6:59 club, which means 1 minute to seven. They meet at seven, but who wants to go to the 7 o'clock club? So it's 6:59 club. Sounds a bit different. And that goes every fortnight. And it's just the 6:59 club, and it's for senior rally kids. And they would possibly get between 40 and 60 kids once a fortnight for the 6:59 club. But they're really all rally kids that are no longer going to rally, and they come to this. And they do all sorts of dumb things, but they have a devotion at the end. But the idea is to hang on to them from rally, hang on to them to get them into this regular youth group and to get them into assembly fellowship. That's where we want to get them. And the rally movement isn't geared to do it on their own. One of the exciting things, one of the important things, I'm sorry, is enthusiasm. And with this, we'll virtually finish. Someone said, and you've got to be enthusiastic, enthusiasm does so much. And as rally workers and rally leaders, I think, you know, apart from the spiritual aspect, which of course is important, enthusiasm is about 90% of the rest. And some people are so boring and others are enthusiastic. And this person said this, enthusiasm is the yeast that makes your hopes rise to the stars. Enthusiasm is the sparkle in your eye. Enthusiasm is the swing in your gait, the grip of your hand. Enthusiasm is the irresistible surge of your will and your energy to execute your ideas. Enthusiasts are fighters. They have fortitude. They have staying qualities. Enthusiasm is at the bottom of all progress. With it, there is accomplishment. Without it, there are only alibis. Excuses. And one of the things we have to be in the Lord's work is enthusiastic. I don't know of anything more exciting than being involved in God's work. I know this, the devil would do anything he could to divide us. And I honestly believe in New Zealand the rally movement is at a bit of a crossroads. We used to be 15, nearly 16,000 strong. For a few years there we lost 1,000 kids a year. And we managed to sort of plug it, but it's still got a long way to go. Your rally Auroras that you started have been a help to give it an image. And we've started getting going again. But we've had to make some changes. The problem that the rally movement's always had is to link the rally movement with the assembly. And it's a two-way job. You never do it if you rubbish the church and the elders. Try to do your own thing secretively. You have to be open. Include the church, involve the elders, let them know what you're doing, seek their help and their advice. And whatever you do, make sure that you never ever divide the church of God. And I know this, there are lots of kids that even in my little ministry are already in heaven. Kids that I've led to the Lord, and one thing or another, the Lord has taken them home. Boy I led to the Lord just a while ago was killed at a railway crossing on his bike. And I hadn't long led him to the Lord, and he's home. Another boy I led to the Lord got spina bifida, and muscular dystrophy, and slowly his body wasted away until last couple of Januaries ago, he went home to be with the Lord. And the rally movement has led hundreds and thousands of kids to the Lord, but we haven't been very successful in getting the child off the rally floor and into assembly fellowship. And I think rally leaders have to work even harder to be accepted and let the elders know we want you to care. And I think elders have got to take that extra effort to say we really care, what can we do? But we can't go on with the leakage and all the efforts we have to get these kids in assembly fellowship, mature, and on their way to glory, and win the parents too.